You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
I found that really helping men to manage that uncertainty and not knowing is really important. This is such a hard place to be, Karen, but one of the things that I would say to men in this situation is that it's not always what they think. I have seen the cases where the kids really are in danger, but a lot of men believe that's going to be the case as soon as there's a new boyfriend introduced, or the kids are going to meet her new partner, or she's getting married. And a lot of times the fear is not actually
aligned with the reality.
Mm-hmm. So managing the emotional response, managing the mindset, and getting to a place of emotional stability so that you can really think clearly and see the situation clearly, I think is really important. If you're going to help your kids, you really need to be in a grounded, clear nervous system state so that you can use your logical brain to its fullest capacity.
Welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today, we're talking about unseen battles, overcoming emotional hurdles in men's divorce. And my guest is Rachel Sloan. Divorce is never easy, but for men, the journey can be particularly challenging, especially on the emotional front. Society often paints men as the villains in these stories, leaving them to navigate the maze of judgment and bias. Friends and family may turn away from you, and even legal professionals can seem predisposed against you. And this episode dives into the unique struggles men face during divorce, from the pervasive feeling of being unable to protect their children to the profound loss of identity that comes from no longer being seen as the family's provider and protector. The emotional landscape of divorce for men is fraught with obstacles different than women. Lifelong conditioning to suppress emotions, coupled with a lack of emotional awareness or safe relationships, make it difficult for you to process your feelings and seek support. The statistics are stark and sobering. Divorced men are 9 times more likely to commit suicide than the average person. This episode aims to shed light on these critical issues and provide a roadmap for emotional recovery and resilience. And the last thing I'll say is there's a lot of divorce coaches out there, and they're primarily women coaching women. Journey Beyond Divorce coaches both men and women. And today's guest works specifically with men. And so just a little bit about our guest. My new friend, Rachel Sloan, is joining me, and she is a master NLP practitioner, a certified life coach, and the creator of Better Beyond Divorce, an emotional recovery program specifically designed for men. Rachel's expertise lies in helping men develop the skills needed to face the overwhelming feelings of shock, betrayal, grief, and anger experienced during and after divorce. She will share her insights on how men can heal both old and new wounds, develop real emotional intelligence, and move on to enjoy healthier and more fulfilling relationships. This is such an important conversation, and I'm so glad you're here to join me in it. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much, Karen. I'm really looking forward to this conversation very much.
Yeah. So I always like to start with my guests asking, how did you find yourself to this calling in life? So you're not a man.
I'm not a man, and I'm not divorced.
And you're not divorced. And so I think a little backstory would be valuable for our listeners.
Sure. So I came to coaching, into this career path, because I worked with a coach. My husband struggled with depression for a long time. And I really struggled with him struggling with depression, and I had a hard time coping with that, especially thoughts around suicide. And there's some other members of my family that have been in that position. And so I worked with a coach, and I was just amazed at how much she was able to help me process what I was feeling and also reframe a lot of my thinking. And it really strengthened my marriage, and made me so much less anxious and happier. And I was like, I love this. I want to do it. And so I started working mostly with women who had depressed partners. That was kind of how I slipped into it. But something in what I was putting out in the world was attracting men. And I started having men asking for coaching. And so I worked with a couple of them. And the first couple of men that I worked with just kind of knocked my socks off. The things that they were dealing with, the intensity of the pain and the hurt they were feeling, but also their willingness, like they were so ready to do this work and engage in it, because it's not easy healing these emotional wounds. But I was also really shocked. So much of the pain they were feeling seemed almost to be a direct result of a lot of the women's empowerment work that I was seeing in the world. Like all of this coaching for women is out there that's about leaving a narcissistic partner and getting away from your controlling husband and taking back your independence. And I always thought that was such a positive thing. And then I started talking to these men, and they had internalized so much of that. So now your wife of 25 years, 30 years starts telling you you're a narcissist. And these men were saying things like, am I a monster? Am I a horrible person? And just the depth of the brokenness and the hurt. And they really believed that there was something wrong with them that couldn't be fixed. And it was really eye-opening, and I realized there was just such a need for them to have somebody who is speaking to them, because there's so much out there for us as women.
Yes.
And there's, you know, and then the things that these men will tell you, that like the advice that they get sometimes even from a therapist to go out and get laid, or just get over it. Or are you really still upset about this? And it's been 6 months and I was married for 40 years. Yes, I'm still upset about this. Right. And things that no one would ever say to a woman, but that's the kind of support that they're getting. And I think part of it too, for me, Karen, was I just really love working with men. Because from the beginning, the men that I've worked with, by the time, it's interesting, it seems like it takes them a while to be ready for coaching. And we can talk about, I think there's a lot of cultural conditioning that contributes to that and a lot of emotional suppression. But when they're ready to do the work, they are all in. And so it's very rewarding to work with men, because they get very good outcome because they're so committed to their healing.
You know, what I find interesting, I agree with everything that you said, and that's a really interesting journey into it. What I find interesting is a lot of the men that I've coached, therapy is much more uncomfortable, right? Because it's all about let's dive in and talk about your emotions. But coaching is like, let's look at your perspective and do some reframing, and we're going to get to your emotions because it's all connected. So I find that so many of the men I've worked with much prefer coaching over therapy, for both the mindset part of it, which is just easy to talk about what I think than what I feel, right? When you haven't been trained to talk about what you feel. And then the second part of it is, you know, men are kind of designed to be fixers. And so in coaching, you're not sitting, telling your story, leaving, and just like swimming in it. you have an action plan, right? And you have things to do and you can move the ball forward and you can feel in charge and empowered to a certain degree. And I think a lot of that, and I'm speaking really to anyone listening, there are so many types of therapy and there are so many therapists who are very coach-like now. So I'm not putting that down at all, but just that the actual coaching part really does meet them the way they're designed in many ways.
Yeah, I hear that a lot, that having the actionable steps. And I find, you know, not just men, but I tend to work with a lot of like engineers or doctors or people who have like a very kind of like, let's identify the system, figure out where the problem is, and then we can fix it.
Right.
And there's actually a lot of ways. So like when I work with emotions with most of my clients, we talk about a lot of it from the perspective of what's happening in the nervous system. And if we can understand the nervous system responses and how that system is engaging and reacting to your environment, then we can intervene in ways that are effective. And so now we're working with the emotions, but we can do it in a way that that fixer kind of very logical brain can accept. And it's not like we're just stewing in it.
Right. I love that.
Yeah, it's really, it's a fun way to do the work. And I agree with you about therapy. You know, it's easy to repeat all the complaints that I've heard, but the reality is that for most of my clients, I really encourage them to see a therapist as well. And I found, you know, a lot of men, and I would imagine a lot of women too, divorce tends to bring up a lot of old pain. So if there's any history of trauma, childhood neglect or abuse or sexual assault, or like war veterans, really any kind of trauma history, all of that tends to surface as we start working with the divorce. And so what I've actually found is that coaching and therapy are very complementary. And I have a large number of clients who do both. And, you know, they find the therapy, it is really good to go and process it that way and talk through it. And then they can come to coaching and we really focus on, okay, what are the action steps that you need to be taking to be moving towards these goals? And I think it allows them to get more out of both.
Yeah, I refer to that as like a hybrid approach. And especially for people who are like, I only have so much finances to invest in this right now. And the depth of emotional healing of the therapy, along with that more mindset, actionable piece of coaching, can just be, you know, the perfect secret sauce.
I really like it when clients tell me they have a therapist, because I know I'm like, okay, yes, that's going to, it's going to make a lot of what we're doing so much easier. And we're going to move through it a lot more quickly.
So let's dive into some of the stuff, the term narcissist and the way it is used and thrown around. And the truth is, even studies show in terms of real narcissism, it is significantly more men than women. Although I've got a number of male clients who are married to somebody on some kind of a spectrum. It's so vilified. And so to your point, I've been listening to podcasts or reading stuff, or I'm on social media and you're a narcissist and you're bad and all of this. So talk a little bit about your experience with that. And how do you help a guy who's been married 40 years? Who's like, well, wait a second. Am I really that much of a monster? Let's talk about that. Because someone who comes to you to work on themselves immediately is not in the narcissistic spectrum, because it's like they wouldn't be there. They wouldn't be going to a therapist or a coach and really doing the work if they can't even see themselves as part of the problem.
Right. I'll speak directly to narcissism, but I do want to mention, Karen, the narcissism is definitely the front and center one. But I think there's a deeper and more subtle messaging going on as well around patriarchy.
Yes.
In general. And the
maybe not so subtle.
Maybe less and less subtle. But it's like that, when I say subtle, like even in TV shows and movies, there's this kind of undertone, and sometimes it is really overt, of men as the source of the problem. So I think they're getting that messaging that, like, as a man, you're the issue from a lot of places. But yeah, then the narcissism one is really painful. And, you know, I've had a number of clients who are like, it's really hard to be home at night because my wife is reading this book that's about, like, if you're married, what to do if you're married to a narcissist, or how to deal with a narcissist. And he's like, every time I see her pick it up, it's, you know, this knife at my chest. And I think something about that word and that label, it is very vilifying, and then it's very dehumanizing. And so once you label someone as a narcissist, what's really interesting is it seems like a lot of times the spouse who thinks the other one's the narcissist stops treating them like a person. Yeah. Right? And so they will do things like read that book right in front of them, or do things that are kind of intentionally hurtful to get back at or try to control the narcissist. And I think it actually drives the other person often to exhibit narcissistic behaviors, because here you are trying so hard to control your narcissistic partner. And so, you know, one of the things I can say is that it, for a lot of these men that I talk to, it, you know, it's this, it's not just anyone telling you you're a narcissist. It's your wife. This is your person and your partner, and the person that is supposed to be there for you and have your back no matter what, and the person that you trust more than anyone else in the world, and the person that, you know, for a lot of them, they've really sacrificed a lot of the things that they wanted or their dreams in order to provide a certain lifestyle or a certain degree of security. And so when that person comes to you and says, you're horrible, you're a narcissist, you've been controlling me for 10 years, you've never loved me, I've never felt safe with you, right? That is such a blow. And it really, it makes them question themselves on a very core level. So there's, you know, there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of shame. And really the first thing we usually have to contend with is a feeling of despair. Because a lot of these men I talk to, they'll talk about, you know, they used to always be able to see the future and now they can't. It's just dark. They can't see the point, you know? And so that blow is so deep that it really, you know, in terms of their nervous system, it really puts them into a freeze state where they feel trapped. They don't feel like there's anything they can do. And the problem is them. There's something so wrong with me that it's hopeless, and that even this person who vowed to love me forever thinks I'm horrible. Sometimes the kids even jump onto that bandwagon, and that's really brutal. So what, in terms of how we help, there's a couple of things. Usually what I start with is helping them deal with that despair state, because when they're in it, there's just no action.
There's nothing else you can do until you can levitate a little bit higher up in your energy. Yeah.
And you just, you know, in that state, you really can't access certain parts of your brain. You get that tunnel vision. You can't see the future. That, like, everything gets warped when we're in these elevated nervous system states.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of interesting research on that. And so I often share that with them. Look, here's what happens. You know, here's the state your nervous system is in. Here's the impact that has on how you think. Here's how it affects your reasoning, because they think they're being logical still, because they've always been logical.
Right.
And so a lot of times that's helpful initially, just to help them understand why they're feeling what they're feeling, and to frame it as a nervous system response to the hurt, to the injury. And even that often gives them a sense of like, okay, this is something that's physiological that's happening to me. And there's some steps I can take to regulate my nervous system. Then I'm going to look at this question of, am I a monster?
So it's almost like you give them a tool to regain some basic control, so that they can kind of move above the despair and start looking at it.
Yeah. So I help them see, like, this is what the despair is. This is why you're feeling hopeless. This is why all these side effects are happening. You're not sleeping. You're losing weight. You can't envision the future. You're having a hard time at work. And just knowing, like, oh, okay, there's something physical happening too. Right. Now it's empowering, right? It gives you something to do.
Yeah.
And so but then after that, the deeper work really is helping them, Karen, get to know who they really are. And so I spend a lot of time in my coaching with men, helping them to start to slow down and notice what's happening internally for them. What do they see, hear, feel on the inside? There's some mindfulness exercises we do to watch their thinking, start to witness emotions in the body. And as we do that, the framework I always give them is that it's my belief from doing this work with a lot of men and seeing it again and again, and also from my NLP training, it's my belief that everything they've ever said or done or felt is driven by a positive intention. And so what I do with them then is I ask them to be curious and to take that as a hypothesis. And if that's true, what is the positive intention? And so then, you know, once we have a little space in the nervous system and they're a little calmer and not in the despair so much, they can actually go back and look at, okay, well, what are the mistakes I've made? You know, what are the issues? A lot of times men will know, like, yes, I was angry a lot of the time. Yeah, I think I was controlling in this way. You know, sometimes I'll have men come and say, you know, I'm just finding out now that my kids are scared of me and I never knew that. And that's so painful and so shameful that, you know, they want to go back in the despair. But if we can stop and say, okay, well, let's assume that everything you did is driven by a positive intention. Let's figure out what was actually behind these behaviors. And what I tell them is the truth that I've done this work now with a lot of men. And, you know, my first client, Karen, the first man I worked with had actually been physically abusive to his wife for about a decade.
Wow.
And yeah. And I started working with him 10 years later, and he had already had kind of this emotional, he'd been really emotionally numb for a long time, and he'd already had kind of this emotional awakening and had done some work. And one of the things we did was we went back to answer that question, you know, why would you do something that horrific? You must be a monster. And I told him the same thing. I said, well, let's see, is there a positive intention? And what we find again and again and again is that even our worst behaviors, and it doesn't mean the behavior was the right one or that it's forgivable or okay or justified in any way, but I found that it does let them have compassion for the person they were when they did it. And so if I can have compassion for that person, I can understand him. And then they start to see it like, I had bad strategies, right? But my intentions were actually, you know, it was all driven by good things. So now they don't need to change who they are. They're not this monster. They just need better strategies. And that's what I've found again and again when I start exploring these questions with men, because we just start like, if you're asking me if you're a monster or a narcissist, well, let's find out. Okay, let's go look at what happened and figure out what was behind it. But I haven't met anyone yet who's actually a monster.
Yeah. And so I think that this ties into the whole theme of today's conversation, which is, given the way society sees men, right? So it's like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you have a tough upper lip and like all this kind of stuff, you know, don't be a sissy, only cry babies, you know, cry, like God forbid a man cries, and all of this. And so then this is your training, and now you enter intimate relationship with a woman.
Yes.
With a woman who's been told, you know, talk about your feelings and feel your feelings, and right. And so can you share with our men who are listening, our men and women, but particularly, have you seen certain patterns or themes of that lack of skillfulness that has driven some of these bad strategies with your clients?
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit SoberLink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
I think maybe one of the core issues is that I think for most of us, the way we handle our own emotions, the way we relate to them, is very similar to the way we relate to other people. Right? So if I've been taught to suppress what I feel and to just deal with it and get on with it and be tough, that's what I'm probably going to expect from other people. Right. So that's the standard. So I see a lot of men, that's what they're expecting of themselves. And honestly, a lot of the times they're really, really good at it.
And they expect their wives to...
They don't understand why the emotion is important to her.
I think right? that is well said.
Because they were taught that their emotions weren't important.
Right.
Right. And most of them learn that lesson so well that they don't even know they're feeling it. Like, it's amazing the depth of suppression. Like, and then that makes them incredibly successful a lot of the time.
Right.
Right. They thrive in all these different areas of their lives, often in their careers, because they can just get on with it. And it, you know, and they don't get worked up about it and they don't feel much about it. But it's there under the surface, and sometimes it's coming out as physical illness. But then there's their wife, and she's, you know, in tears over, you know, something that happened with a girlfriend, or she's been super stressed at work, and then the washing machine broke down, and now she's crying, and he doesn't understand why she's so upset.
So from her perspective, you're not hearing me, you're not seeing me, you're not supporting me, you don't have my back, from the female perspective. And and the husband's saying, you know, you're speaking Chinese, I speak Japanese, I have no idea what's being communicated here.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't understand women, right? Like, what's going on here?
But who are you?
Who are you, right? Or sometimes, and I think often actually, it starts there, but then he starts hearing her and she's like, you're not understanding, this matters to me.
Right.
And he's like, okay, this matters to you, so let's fix it, right? And so then he's like, okay, well, it's fine. We're going to get the washing machine taken care of. And why don't you just tell your friend you won't see her this weekend? You can do it next weekend. And, you know, just have the conversation with your boss. And then she's like, you're not listening to me, right? Because she doesn't need him to fix it. She just needs him to be with her while she feels something that's strong.
Which is not a skill set that he necessarily has developed.
He has no idea how to do that, right? And he doesn't know what that means. Right. And I think that's maybe the important thing for us women to remember, is that, you know, for a man who's been taught his whole life, because, you know, especially from childhood, the two really big ones that men learn are grief and anger are not appropriate for them to experience. Right. Like, don't cry. You're being a wuss. You're being a pussy. Or, you know, like, there's so much criticism. And then they learn that their anger is dangerous.
Yeah.
Right. And so most men really suppress those feelings. But those are the feelings that most women want heard, right? I want you to be with me when I'm sad. I want you to, you know, listen and let me be angry and vent and be present with me, and validate it. But all he's learned is that when those things come up, you have to shut them down.
Well, and I would imagine, even I've had clients where it's like, you know, the wife I want to know what's going on with you. Like, you're all walled up, and like, you know, I want to know, like, invite me in. Like, I heard that so often where it's like, I can't, there's just a wall. I can't get in. I mean, this is my husband of how many years, and there's an intimacy, but there's a barrier. And then of course, I have a coach on my team who always says, you know, always assume best intention, which I just love that saying. And I think that as one is in a relationship for a long time, they take each other for granted and all of this, it's easy to assume not best intention, like, you're doing this on purpose type thing.
Well, it feels like it, right? Because here you are from your side saying again and again what you need and what you want.
Yep.
But he really has no framework to understand it. And there is, sometimes it looks different. I have quite a few men that I work with who are more, let's say, emotionally needy in their relationships. And there's quite a number of couples that I've seen where the woman is more closed off, or she tends to withdraw from any kind of conflict. And so that's another pattern that I see happening for men, is they don't necessarily know how to ask for those emotional needs to be met. And so they'll be pursuing, and what they're seeking is affection, validation, reassurance, love. That maybe they didn't get when they were little. But to women coming from a grown man, that can feel threatening or controlling, or like he's trying to, mostly control. That's the big complaint that I hear in those dynamics.
So I think we could spend the entire conversation on this whole area of how men were raised and how society messages to males that impact this. But then if we move into the divorce, actually, so now you know, your wife hires an attorney, I'm married to a narcissist. And you were saying earlier, like the public, the professionals, like start just immediately accepting that as the, or echoing it as the obvious situation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I want to be a little careful with this topic, Karen, because it doesn't happen as often as the internet wants people to think it does. It is, in my experience, yes, sometimes the courts, the legal systems, even a GAL will be biased towards the mother. And it does happen. And there are a lot of cases where there's some really tragic events that happen and men are, you know, accused of things they didn't do or alienated from their children. However, what I've seen is that very, very frequently there is more balance than we think in those systems. I think that the horror stories do get more attention. And so a lot of the men I work with have so much fear around that, especially if they have young kids. But I actually have a lot of clients who have sole custody of their kids. And so it's not, it does depend on where you are, what the events are, what she's saying. It is not uncommon for women to file protective orders against their husbands when they decide to file for divorce or to accuse them of something that's not, didn't really happen. It does all happen.
Yes.
But I do see often more balance in those scales than I think most people are afraid.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And yet, if there is a fight in the marital home and the wife makes the phone call, or if the husband makes the phone call, the police are going to show up and they're going to assume that the husband was the one who started it, or if she says that it's true right off the bat. So that's absolutely true. And I think that it's not so easy to just, I mean, I've got female clients who really need orders of protection, and it's more emotional abuse or verbal abuse than physical. And it's not always so easy to get. And so I think that this really brings us to a mindset thing. It's, you know, I'm on the internet, I'm looking at social media, it looks like I'm a guy, I'm screwed, everyone's going to diminish me. And then if that's your mindset, and that's how you put your one foot forward, there's a really good chance that you're going to manifest the kinds of reactions that you fear, right? So I think that there's that piece of it too.
Yeah, I think just from the nervous system perspective, right? If you're afraid and you're going into your legal interactions, into court, into mediation with a lot of fear, most men respond to fear by getting angry. Right. You go into a fight or flight response.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you're showing up with anger now, yes, you are more likely to kind of contribute.
Look like the guy, right? You're looking like the guy they're saying that you are, even though you're not. Exactly.
Even though you're not, even though it's coming out of fear. That said, sometimes, you know, I have seen men just fight for years to get custody of children who were in dangerous situations and have, you know, child protective services involved, a GAL involved, and all of them still thinking mom was fine until finally it gets so bad that, you know, mom even goes to jail and finally dad gets hurt. So it does, there are men really living with that reality.
I've got a couple of clients. So I agree with you. I think it spans, the entire range. And, you know, for those listening, I think that the takeaway of this part of the conversation is stay off of social media. Don't believe everything you read on the internet. And, you know, one of my big sayings coming out of 12-step is keep your side of the street clean. And so that whole, if you're working with a coach and you're paying attention to your reactivity and your nervous system and your monkey mind and where it takes you, then you can have a lot more control in those situations. And I think a lot of these rules obviously go for men and women, but the truth is there's so much support out there for women. And I'm so thrilled to be having this conversation really focused on the male experience. And I would love to pivot, because this is a big one that I've experienced as well, to dads who are worried about the safety of their kids and find themselves in a position where they feel like they can't protect them.
Yeah, that's maybe one of the hardest situations I see.
Yeah.
It's right up there. Maybe the second one is when they are still sharing a home with their wife and she's dating. That one's pretty brutal. But having your kids in a situation where you can't protect them, I think for any parent,
yes,
is devastating, right? That's your whole prerogative. It's like your entire job is to protect them. But I think especially for men, because a lot of times that is the role that they see themselves playing,
yes,
right? That my value to my family is that I am providing and protecting.
Yeah.
And I am making sure everyone is safe, everyone is okay. And to know that your kids are in a situation where that might not be the case,
yeah,
that sense of powerlessness and despair, it's really challenging. Because when someone's accused of being a narcissist and they feel despair and hopelessness, we can work through that and then we can help them actually take action on it and answer those questions and change things. But a lot of times when your kids are in a bad situation, there's not actually, you actually are in a position where there's not a lot that you can do. So, you know, not, there are things that can be done, but sometimes there is a period of time, you know, you can't always just go over there and get them like you would want to do.
Right.
So I found that really helping men to manage that uncertainty and not knowing is really important. You know, one of the, it's such a hard place to be, Karen. But again, one of the things that I would say to men in this situation is that it's not always what they think. Right? I have seen the cases where the kids really are in danger, but a lot of men believe that's going to be the case as soon as there's a new boyfriend introduced, or the kids are going to meet her new partner, or she's getting married. And a lot of times the fear is not actually
aligned with the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So managing the emotional response, managing the mindset, and getting to a place of emotional stability so that you can really think clearly and see the situation clearly, I think is really important. Because the default, right, is, oh my gosh, my kids are in trouble, fight or flight. I've got to do something. And then you try everything you can think to do. And if you still can't get access to your kids, you go into that shutdown state. But again, in those states, you lose access to so many parts of your executive functioning in your brain.
Exactly.
And so if you're going to help your kids, you really need to be in a grounded, clear nervous system state so that you can use your logical brain to its fullest capacity. And so that's usually where I start with those clients is let's get your nervous system working for you. Then we're going to look at this situation and figure out what needs to be done, if anything, and what's the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. The emotional regulation is front and center. And, you know, I wonder, so of course, at Journey Beyond Divorce, we deal largely in the high conflict, the dysfunctional, the abusive. And so I would say that right off the top of my head, I can think of three men who early on, the question, and I know women do deal with this as well, but the question is, can I leave? Like, I have to stay. I have to stay because the only way I can protect my kids is staying. And if I leave, and I know, you know, at best it's 50-50, but maybe I'll get less because I'm whatever the moneyed spouse and I have a bigger schedule or whatever the case may be. So that's one of the things that I find myself addressing and talking about how if you stay, you remain emotionally dysregulated yourself and the kids are in a household filled with conflict. And so really nobody benefits, at least if you're in a separate house during the time that you have them. You're a better parent, and there's so much you can do to then help them support the higher conflict parent. So that's in my world. Do you have any, you know, thoughts or experience on that?
Yeah, the cases where I've seen that come up, Karen, are especially when there's stepkids involved.
Mm.
Right. So if I leave, I can protect my kids, but I can't protect her kids.
Mm.
So I've seen that be a real struggle. And also if there's a mental health issue, You know, it's not uncommon, I think, especially in the high conflict area, right, for one partner to be suffering from bipolar disorder or borderline personality disorder or depression, anxiety, right? So there can be a real concern for her ability. And I would say this probably applies to both men and women pretty equally, right? Yes. Being in situations where, what do you do? And yeah, what I tend to do in those situations, Karen, I have to say, usually my gut feeling is the same thing you just said, right? Children need Dr. Susan Johnson, who's the scientist who started all the attachment theory. You know, she talks about what children need is one adult in their lives who is consistently emotionally accessible and responsive. And if the state of conflict in your home is such that neither of you can be that for them, your kids are really losing something that they need.
Yeah.
So if leaving would help you be emotionally available, accessible, maybe that's better for them. But honestly, you know, I've seen a lot of cases where people really aren't in a position yet to make that choice. And I always have to come back to myself that I can't know, you know, no matter how much I talk to you, there's stuff going on that I don't know. So I don't always know what's best for you. Right. And so, you know, sometimes we focus on trying to get clarity on the choice. A lot of times where I'll go with people is how do we increase that emotional stability, regardless of the choice that you make? And what I find is that if we can do that, the choice often gets easier, right? Because again, the thinking gets
the
changes.
Thinking gets clearer, right?
And you get, but that's, I mean, these are, you know, these are really challenging situations.
Yeah.
And maybe one thing I would just offer to anyone listening who's in it is that, you know, you're not alone in it. And if you can get some support, you know, whether it's joining a group or going to therapy or working with a coach, but having a place outside your home where you can go and get that validation, that affirmation, the support in it. And, you know, I'm amazed how often I hear from the men in my groups over and over that just knowing they're not alone in this is so helpful.
Yeah. And I think having a place to process, you know, once you learn how to process, it's like, you know, almost every guy I know, they go and hang out with their friends and they know what they think about the sports players or politics. But, you know, so how's their wife and kids? It's like, we didn't talk about that. You know, like, it's just, it's such a cultural, male cultural thing. And here you are, you know, hemorrhaging on the emotional emergency room floor, and you need to process and you need that kind of support, and you need it to be safe and not go get laid or pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And so I think that for me, it seems as though, you know, if where there are support groups, that's great. And I know there's more, I've been like researching them, and then having someone like yourself who it's like, okay, at least you have a safe person that you can go to and talk this through, who knows what you're going through. I'd really like to talk about that statistic regarding the suicide rate for divorced men. And I know that this is a really tender topic, but I think it's important to highlight because it highlights the complexity and the despair and the isolation that these men feel. And so can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the statistics are scary for divorced men. They say you're nine times more likely to die by suicide as a divorced man. And I think the last thing
and not says, compared to a divorced woman, compared to people in general.
Compared to the general population of America. So it's the United States statistics. And, you know, men more likely than women for a couple of different reasons anyway. But then the difference after divorce, I think divorced women, I don't know. They do have a higher risk, but it's like three times or something. Whereas for men, it's much higher. And I think it really highlights the isolation and also how strongly conditioned most men are not to feel what they're feeling. Because what I see happening with divorce is that most men are very, very good emotional suppressors, and it works very well for them most of their lives, except that maybe it's damaging their relationships. But they're doing okay. Like, they don't even really know that that damage is happening, right? They're doing all right. And then the divorce happens, and all of a sudden, it's not like one little emotion. It's like you get a lifetime of pain and you can't turn it off, right? It's like the pipe burst. And so now you have this person who the only tool they've ever been given to deal with emotional pain is to shove it down.
And the dam just broke.
And the dam just broke, and there's nowhere to put it. Right. And so it's so overwhelming. And, you know, I talk to a lot of men, and not just my clients, but you know, the men I do consultation calls with, I do interviews, I talk with a lot of folks from my YouTube channel, and about 50% of them tell me that they either actively have or have had in the past suicidal thoughts. And so if that many of them are talking to me about it, I know a lot more are having it.
Absolutely.
And it just, you know, it's just a symptom of how unbearable and intolerable their pain is. And I think what's really tragic about this statistic is that, you know, we have the tools, and there are so many different ways to help these men. There's so many things that they can learn and skills they can develop, because that's what this emotional processing is. It's not some difference between men and women. It's just a skill set. And it's a skill set that they can learn, but they don't know that. And then they tend to be so isolated that they're not asking for help. So they don't have an opportunity to find out that these tools are there for them. So there's a lot that drives that statistic. And one thing that, well, there's a couple things I'd love to share if anyone here is having those kinds of thoughts.
Thanks.
Because the thoughts themselves can be really terrifying. Because, you know, here now, not only am I feeling all of this grief and pain and shame and regret, but now my brain's trying to kill me. Right. And that can almost be this inner tug of war. And it really feels like now I can't trust myself. And so I want to offer to anyone in that situation, even that part of your brain, even the suicidal thoughts, have a positive intention. Right. And I've had the opportunity to do some of this work with some of my clients to go in and explore that part of them and figure out what it's doing and what it wants. And what we find again and again is it just wants the pain to stop. And it's just another part of your brain that has one strategy, and it just doesn't have enough strategies, right? It needs more tools.
Right.
And so what I've found is for most men that are having those thoughts, once they get the skill sets to manage the emotional pain, the suicidal thoughts go away, right? Because they're only there as like this last ditch, desperate attempt to stop hurting. And so, you know, something that is simple and kind of feels silly, but can actually help is when you're having those thoughts, if you can just stop and breathe and just acknowledge that, you can even say to yourself, talking to yourself, but your brain's talking to you anyway, you can just say, thank you for wanting the pain to stop, or thank you for wanting me to feel better. And sometimes just that acknowledgement will help quiet that voice, but then you have to follow through and find better ways, other ways to actually address the emotional pain. So ignoring it is not going to help. But there's some other statistics that are actually, I think, really hopeful and can help people that are having those thoughts. One is that when the studies show us that when someone decides to commit suicide, if they survive the first 5 minutes, there's an 80% chance that they're not going to die, which means that those thoughts pass. Right. So even when they're strong, they still change and pass.
Right.
And it happens relatively quickly. And the other statistic that I really love is that people who survive suicide, who try to kill themselves and survive, the vast majority, the number is something like over 90%, go on to not die by suicide, which means that they found better strategies. Right? They found alternatives. And one of the reasons that the statistic is so high for men is because men are more likely to use a firearm. Women are more likely to do something like take pills, right? But we know that if you survive the first 5 minutes, the thoughts pass. So if a woman takes pills and 5 minutes later, she doesn't want to die anymore, she can still do something, right? But obviously if you're using a firearm, you don't have that window of time. And so I like to share these things with people that are having these thoughts. One, to let you know that most people who have these thoughts are not going to die by suicide. They're going to find other ways that are very effective to moving on from the pain. And so you can too. But even if you're having them, and even if you're feeling fear, there's things that you can do to give yourself time, like creating a crisis response plan for yourself, where there's a list of things that you're going to do or people you're going to call if you feel that way. It gives you that window of time for the feelings to pass.
Yeah.
So we actually have a lot that we can do to support people who are feeling or suffering with those suicidal thoughts. And so if they exist, they're, in my experience, very normal for men going through divorce.
Absolutely.
They're a symptom of the pain. They're a symptom we can manage while we get the pain under control. And so anyone who's feeling those thoughts or struggling with that, I would really recommend that they, one, talk to somebody about creating a crisis plan and get help with that. I have a YouTube video that talks about that and walks you through like a step-by-step process for it. But then to really prioritize, this is your brain telling you that you need help moving through this pain and you need to learn these emotional regulation skills. And they are just skills. And once you learn them, you're not going to need these kinds of thoughts anymore.
Yeah, I would love to put that YouTube video in the show notes for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so this is really helpful information to be sharing and to just kind of shed some light on these challenges. And I just want to thank you for what you do in the world, and it's so needed, and you have such a kind and gentle and clearly well-educated and experienced background for it. And so, and for the men listening, you don't have to be alone. There are people that you can go to. Why don't, Rachel, you give us your contact information and how people can find you so that they can delve a little bit deeper if they want to.
Absolutely. I can go ahead and say the best way to reach me, Karen, or do you want me to give it to you for the show notes?
I'll put it in the show notes and you can just say it.
So I do have my website's probably the best place to start. It's rachelsloancoaching.com or my YouTube channel. I have over 200 videos there talking about all kinds of things. And honestly, I would tell you, if you're listening, I've had lots of emails from people who've just said, I've been watching your videos for a year and applying all the tools and I'm feeling a lot better. So if you aren't going to work with me or don't want to work with me directly, so much of what I do with my clients is available there on YouTube, and it's at Rachel Sloan Coaching. And then I do work with people inside a program called Better Beyond Divorce. And one of the things that I've learned from the men I work with, Karen, and this is hard for a lot of them to accept, is that they need other men in this process. So yes, I offer one-on-one support, and I do a lot of coaching with my clients, but so much of the healing is through the group work that we do. So I help men work together in small groups, in bigger groups. I have a private community that is not on social media, that is just a really safe place for them to talk about these things, and being able to be emotionally vulnerable and intimate with other men is a really healing experience. It's really been amazing for me as a coach to witness.
Beautiful. And so necessary, so vital. So if you're tuning in and just feeling like a little seen and heard, please go and check out Rachel's website. It's in the show notes. Her YouTube channel also in the show notes. And you have a gift, don't you?
Yes, I have a free masterclass. It's an hour long kind of deep dive into the emotional regulation piece. And we talk a lot about the changes that men experience in their nervous system, how you tend to move through fight or flight into the freeze state, what that feels like. And in the masterclass, I give you a lot of tools to start this work of calming the nervous system, grounding it. And we really talk about it from that kind of systems frame of view. So that for the logical thinkers who are like, I want to know why, I don't want to just talk about my feelings for no reason, the masterclass is going to give you a lot more of the research and the background on how this works, why it works. There's actually a very specific part of the brain that we're activating that has neural connections to your limbic system where all these emotions are coming up. So if you are like, I know I need some help, but I don't know about all this emotional stuff, it doesn't sound like what I need. Watch the masterclass. It'll give you the science behind it, which is going to help you engage in that work and feel, honestly, it's just really empowering, because now I tell my clients this all the time. It's, if you had a broken leg, you'd go to the doctor, you'd have surgery if you needed to, you'd wear the cast, you'd do the physical therapy, and the leg would heal, right? And so much of what we're dealing with after divorce is a nervous system injury. And there are, we know a lot about the nervous system now. We have a ton of research to back it up. And there's a lot of things that we can do, just like the doctor would do for your injured leg. So the masterclass kind of shares that perspective and then gives them tools to get started doing that healing work for themselves.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us. Please check out Rachel's website and YouTube channel and find the support that you need and that works for you. And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, take care.
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today. Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.